Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into the holidays. It's Pittsburgh week. And on Friday, we're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. We're going to be at Pappas. Mike Bordick, former Oriole, is going to join us, as well as Jim Reese, my pal from Offa Kermit, fresh off his Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives cameo, as well as our friend Leonard Raskin of Raskin Global. And John Kelly going to be coming by and talking about the big bike race going on around here, as well as the friends at Pappas. It's all presented by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. We're going to be playing. I have some scratch-off tickets on Friday as well. This guy plays a couple times a year, and a little bonus when the Caps play the Penguins from time to time, back when Barry Trotz was manning the Caps booth. He is a Marylander and once made the mistake of being involved in that Washington football franchise at some point. He's made his way up to Pittsburgh. He's been a longtime Associated Press insider covering all things Pittsburgh sports. And he doesn't love the Steelers, which makes it even more fun when I have him on. I have Steelers colors on right now with my Costas in because we're doing our 30th anniversary over there on December 15th. Will Graves joins us, Marylander and a Pittsburgher. Yep. Your kids like Pittsburgh sports, though. We've been through this, right? Your kids are like Pirates fans.
I mean, sort of. I mean, yeah, my son has like a love-hate relationship with the Pirates, as does, I think, the rest of the city at this point.
Since 79. My dad hated him since 71. Just so
you know, they like the players. He likes the players, but then they traded Jacob Stallings, their go-go catcher, to the Marlins for a couple of prospects. And it's just very hard for fans here to get attached to the baseball team. And, I'm sure he is a Baltimore guy and as a guy who has watched what's happened with the Orioles. I know you guys sort of feel the same way. And actually, you know what? I am a Maryland native. I got the opportunity a couple weeks ago to go down to Salisbury University. An old friend of mine is in the communications department there. And I came down. I talked to a couple of different classes. I gave a speech at their Society of Professional Journalists chapter meeting. And it was excellent, excellent. I got to see my first boss, Bill Hoffey, the great longtime sports editor of this Easton Star Democrat, which was my first gig out of school. And had a very, very soft heart still for my hometown, which is Waldorf, the Eastern Shore as well. I miss Maryland quite a bit. It's flat, too. I miss flat. I'll be honest with you.
Dude, I'll tell you this, man. I spent the whole month of August eating crab cakes all over the state, right? So we decided to do this crab cake tour, and the lottery's come along to sponsor it. It's been a great idea to sit down with friends and have a crab cake and a beer. But it put me on this pathway as a Marylander, a guy from Dundalk, who's been all over the world. You know, I've been continents, flying, doing all that. Never been to Deep Creek Lake. I mean, I drive by it. I go, right, you know, out to Breezewood and I go north, but I'd never been to Cumberland in my life. I had never been to Swallow Falls or Oakland. I had only been to Waldorf once or twice and sort of gone through on 301, going down toward Richmond or whatever, right? Yep. So I went to Leonardtown. I went to St. Mary's. I went to Point Lookout. I went to the Frying Pan and had breakfast. You know what I mean? I did stuff. And over on the Eastern Shore, you mentioned Easton and Salisbury. I had a crab cake with the mayor of Salisbury, Jake Day, back in the summer. So seeing your homeland and coming home, I don't know if I had moved to Pittsburgh 15 years ago how I'd feel about coming back to Baltimore, right? Like, it is a little different when you pick up and you move to another place and they say you can't come home again, but there's always crab cakes here, bro.
No, trust me, I got my fix. I mean, I got my, you know, I think I had five meals, I think, down there, and I think every one of them had some sort of seafood in it. Because I mean, no offense, we're not near anything here in Pittsburgh. If you're catching something out of the river here, I would not suggest you put it on your plate later. So,
well, I would also say in a place where they put French fries on a sandwich and coleslaw, you know, I mean, it's a little weird up there. Will Graves has been covering. So we're avoiding talking about the Steelers because you know they're. We'll see them. Look, man, this division. I say, and if I had you on in the off season, we would have said, "Oh, the Browns, and you know, everybody's always down on the Steelers, and I give them a hard time because I say the Steelers always beat our ass, and they might do it on Sunday, right? So as much as you get down on them, these division games get be a little different. But certainly the Bengals' ascension, the fact that the Ravens are 8-3 by hook or crook by accident, quite frankly, because they haven't played very well and they're not a very good team. But the Steelers have been a whole different thing this year, and certainly with Ben and for Tomlin, that you're always wondering where bottom is, and we pray for that sort of thing here in Baltimore, that we might be finding a bottom right now, right, with the Steelers.
I mean, look, everybody made choices here in the offseason. I mean, you know, they made a choice to bring Ben back at a reduced rate. Like, they could have, to me, like, they rebooted, except at the position where rebooting is, like, the most vital part of the whole deal, right? And, you know, Ben made a choice to come back knowing that Marquise Pouncey had retired, knowing that David DeCastro was on his way out, knowing that Al Villanueva now plays for the Ravens. I mean, he made all of these decisions knowing that it was going to be rough, and they let him come back. It was almost in the hoping that they could basically be in the conversation. And, you know, it's just, they were strapped for cash. I mean, I wrote a story coming off the Bengals game pointing out that Mike Hilton is the guy that the Steelers would have loved to have kept, right? I mean, that's the guy that he's on a practice squad guy. He becomes one of the most versatile nickel guys in the league, but he priced himself out of the market. They didn't have any money. They didn't have any money to go and refurbish the offensive line. They didn't have any money to go get depth on the defensive line. So this is sort of, I mean, this was coming. I mean,
and Ben gave him money back.
Yeah. And yeah, he gave him, well, he deferred about $10 million to kind of help them out. And, you know, they used the money wisely. That's what we, you know, they brought Juju back. You know, they got Trey Turner on a deal the day they cut DeCastro. But like they really have, they're paying their top end guys still a lot of money. And the problem with that is, I mean, they gave T.J. Watt, you know, a Brinks truck worth, which he, to be fair, I mean, he deserves. He's one of the five best players in football. But because of that, they have no depth. And when you look at the snap count total from the Bengals game, especially on defense, you know, Tyson Alualu went out for the season the second week. Stephon Tuitt hasn't played all year because he had knee surgery and he had some personal stuff going on. They have very little depth. They had a guy named Isaiah Loudermilk, a rookie fifth-round pick who was not supposed to play this year. He was the guy chasing Burrow to the end zone in the first quarter on the touchdown run. He's a defensive lineman. I mean, you know, Arthur Mollett is playing nickelback. I mean, you know, Taco Charlton and Derek Suka, who guys were on practice squads elsewhere. I mean, you know, like they are plundering practice squads for guys that are playing on Sunday. And that just tells you that, I mean, they just do not, because of their cash situation, they do not have a lot of depth. It's being exposed, especially when you add a 17th game to this thing. And I think that's just sort of, they've kicked the can down the road a long time. And finally, like, it's here. I mean,
well, we all spend a lot of money, right? And around here, the difference is we're on the quarterback with the rookie contract, and that's going to change. It changed a lot. Flacco went from being, hey, Joe, Super Bowl, to how much are we paying you, bro? Right. And there's Ben's been making a lot of money for a long time, going back to the motorcycle issue in Georgia and, you know, all the nonsense that's gone on over two decades for him. But if you're out of money and you're not any good, it means you didn't spend your money wisely, right?
I think they did not anticipate the pandemic, and they did not, as nobody did, and they did not anticipate the cap going down. And I think that they were assuming, you know, you look at the contracts, that they were going to have another $10 to $15 million to play with on top of what they are, you know, that's what the Steelers do, right? They spend right up to the cap because they're trying to win every single year. And I just think the economics of the NFL and the reality of the NFL, and this is the thing that kind of annoys me about Steeler fans and sort of speaks to the entitlement that they've enjoyed for basically most of the last 50 years, like especially in the free agency area, the league is not designed for teams to be good year after year after year. I mean, it is not. It is supposed to be cyclical. It is supposed to be up and down. And they and the Patriots are basically the two franchises the last 20 years that have been able to avoid that. And I just think it's not, I mean, you can't, the Turk comes from everybody eventually. And I think that's just sort of come for these guys.
Will Graves has been covering all things Pittsburgh sports, taking a break from Penguins and Panthers and God, the Pirates at some point. I'm going to have Robbie Inchmikowski on. We'll talk a little Pirates, a little baseball with him. But for you on the football side of things in this season, I put the TV on and we've played all these odd games, you know, Mondays and Thursdays and late nights. So I've red zoned a lot. And because I'm not traveling every week anymore, you know, I've managed to stay home and the plague changed all that. Boy, of all the things in the world that the plague is screwed up, dining out, dining in, doing things, concerts, all of this traveling, sitting around watching this league, the league is sort of ascended into a different place because it feels like even when there's a crappy, and you know how crappy it was with the Washington football team and the Seattle Seahawks on Monday night,
right.
So crappy tickets were $10 on the internet, that even the game comes down to a field goal, even when the teams don't matter and you're listening for the announcers or you're watching the Manning cast or you're just a Russell Wilson fan or whatever the bad teams are, even the really crappy games in red zone, the 2-9 versus 3-8, at the end of the game, it's a field goal. It really is amazing how the league creates its own theater. And I don't mean Antonio Brown v. Mike Tomlin or whatever. I just mean on the field when they put the games on, the games wind up being a lot more compelling. And it's some magic the league has.
Well, I mean, you know, you say compelling, and I say this as somebody who sat in and watched the Steelers-Lions tie a few weeks ago. I wouldn't call it compelling. Comical is a word that comes to mind. I do think, I mean, this is what the league wants. I think there's been a record this season on games decided through 12 weeks on games decided on the final play. I think it's 25 or 26. And even, you know, the football teams winning against the Seahawks came down to a, you know, an onside kick recovery at 15 seconds left. I mean, I do think that there is parity, but I also sort of wonder if that affects the overall product because there isn't a Goliath out there to chase. There's no longer. I mean, even the, you know, the Buccaneers so far, maybe they're just sort of marking time until they get to the playoffs, which is sort of the vibe that I'm getting from them. There's no great team. And I think that, you know, it makes me happy I don't bet on this sport for a living because, I mean, I'm winning in my pick'em league with my high school buddies, but like it's not for money, which is good. It is, I mean, every week, like it is a literally a week to week league. You have no idea what you're getting some weeks, which is what the league wants, like on a sustained interest basis. But I just wonder if it's good for the league to have so much. I mean, look at the, like Buffalo, for example. I mean, Buffalo is great one week and bad the next. It is totally baffling. Kansas City, you know, I think have started to sort of figure it out, but I just wonder, and I've watched, I've caught a lot of Ravens games and they play close games, no matter who they're playing. I mean, it's going to be tight. And to be fair, I think it's a credit to the coaching staff. I think they're the best run organization in the NFL. And, you know, everybody before the season, your buddy Mark Caboli and I had an extended conversation about how he's worried about the Ravens don't have any depth and, the, you know, their defense stinks and whatever. And I'm like, I trust that coaching staff. So, I mean, to be fair, on the plus side of it, it looks like once you get to the playoffs, it's anybody's ballgame. But I sort of miss having the you know, the Death Star out there somewhere, some team to kind of that sort of plays the big bad, and that's what everybody's chasing. I think the league could, it'd be good for the league if somebody sort of steps forward here in the last 5 weeks and says, hey, we're that dude.
Well, that might be Belichick and the Patriots, and I don't know that we want that, right? I mean, it's like the Yankees.
It's a testament to his greatness, though, right? I mean, it's last year they took a shot with Cam. They took their lumps and now they're right back in it. I mean, that's if the Steelers are following a playbook on what to happen, what to do after a franchise icon moves on, like the what the Patriots have done is it. I mean, so to be fair, but yeah, they are sort of nameless gray faces. Mac Jones is like random guy at the end of the bar, but I mean, you're right. I don't think it's a bad thing that they look good. I think it's sort of, you know, the older I get, the more I respect greatness. And I certainly think that what they've done there is remarkable.
God, I don't want to get on a bus and go to Foxborough in January. Please don't do not. It's bad enough I got to go to Pittsburgh this weekend after the holidays. Will Graves is here from the Associated Press doing all things AP. All right, so bring me up to speed on Ben and Tomlin and not what stupid fans are going to say, but what's really going to happen here? I mean, Ben's done, right? Like, we're going to see him. We might see him the first week of January or whatever, maybe. But, like, they're not making the playoffs. You're reading rights on them, right?
I mean, when Mike Tomlin, after their bye week, he came out and, you know, we asked him, well, what'd you do during the bye week? And he said he watched a lot of football and he said he was, you know, in sort of stating the obvious here, but he said, you know, you become very cognizant of quarterback mobility, right? And how vital it is to an offense to have a quarterback that can make plays with his legs, basically is what he said. And I mean, look, they don't have that.
Well, Ben was that guy. Ben was the king of extending the play, right?
Right.
Linebacker would hit him and he'd knock him off and some safety and he'd dive out of the way. And then there's Hines Ward running past you.
Right.
Right.
And I just think those days are long gone. And he even said that, you know, he acknowledged that when Ben was really struggling early in the season. But you look at the Bengal game, I mean, he is backpedaling and can't get away from the rush fast enough. And I don't blame him. I mean, he's playing 18 years. He's got a lot of miles, taking a lot of hits. His place in Canton is assured. Pride, though, man, on both sides. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and categorically say Ben is not coming back. I mean, I think he shouldn't come back, and I think the team should not let him come back because you need to move on. It's, I mean, the window with this with him is closed. I mean, they even if they sneak into the playoffs, if they get lucky, I mean, you look at the schedule the last few weeks, it is not – it doesn't look good.
But to just your like we point, all, where is the window when Hayward's 33 and
right? No, exactly. I mean, and that is. I mean, I think
the window is you have Watt, right? I mean, the window is you right. Got a great player,
he's
but that's standard, all you got.
He's the new standard bearer, and I mean, look. The thing is, if you take the Steelers and you covered up the logo and you said we have a first-year offensive coordinator. We have a first-year offensive line coach. We have two rookies starting on the offensive line. We've got a rookie running back. We've got a rookie tight end. And you would say in November, we're 25th or whatever they are in total offense. You'd be like, well, that kind of makes sense because it's taking a, it's going to take a while to figure this stuff out. But they didn't do that. Ben's presence raised the bar of expectations on what this season might be. And I think just that's, it's silly. I mean, that's just their brand name. And they're, to be fair, the pedigree that they've earned sort of buying them that goodwill. And I think it's just what you've seen, especially the last, you know, they had that little stretch run where they beat bad teams and they were barely beating them, like barely beating the Seahawks in overtime at home, barely beating the Bears at home late. I mean, I think the time has come. The time, to be honest with you, came last year. I mean, because if I was them and I wrote this and I said this and I've, everybody that has me on, I talk about this, like they wasted a year. This was a wasted year because like they still have no idea what they have with Mason Rudolph. Although I think I've come around to the idea that he is not even a caretaker. Like, I just don't think he's a difference maker in a, or a game manager.
He's not a starting quarterback in this league.
Right. I mean, I thought that he might be, but it just seems to be that, you know, the play against the Lions. I mean, maybe it was the game plan or whatever, but he was not accurate. He was not good. The only thing he can do is throw the ball 60 yards down the field, which is something Ben can't do. So now they have no quarterback, and they've got guys, you're right, that are aging now. They've got young guys. I mean, they've got, you know, Minka Fitzpatrick is still in his rookie deal. He's got another year on that, and they're very high on him, you know. But like Devin Bush is a guy they traded up for to get at number 10. He's been awful. I mean, he's just been, you know, he's a middle linebacker who just – inside linebacker who's just not physical, not aggressive. So for me, like – somebody asked the other day, like, why did the players stay? Why did the starters stay in down 41-3? And you know what? When Ben gets enshrined in Canton, every one of those yards is going to be on that plaque, right? And every one of those, and he passed Phil Rivers for fifth all-time in completions. Trust me, I think he is aware of this stuff. It is very important to him to be in the top five, six, seven of the most, you know, the top categories, yards, touchdowns, completions. And I think he's, you know, I think that's one of the reasons that he stuck around. I really do. I think he wanted to leave no doubt about what his credentials are. Because otherwise, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, Vance McDonald, one of his best friends on the team. Marquise Pouncey, one of his best friends on the team. Al Villanueva, one of his best friends on the team. I mean, everybody, all of his boys are gone. I mean, he's the oldest guy on the roster outside of Cam Hayward and Joe Hayden by like 10 to 12 years. It's just... you know, and it's telling that, like, when Mason got the spot start when Ben got COVID, and we asked Mason after the game, hey, did you hear from him? And he said no. I mean, it's bizarre. I mean, I don't know. I just, like...
well, we're not around the team anymore, right? So, like, the same thing with me. People ask me about the Ravens, and I'm like, you know, I don't get treated very well. I wear a mask. I ask questions. Sometimes they answer them. Sometimes they don't. Right. And sometimes I don't even feel like asking. You know, like, the other day, somebody said, why weren't you in the press conference? I'm like, I sat in the front row. I didn't have any... snarky questions or fun questions or things they're going to expand upon after a game. There's no locker room. It's just, this is a different thing after 30 years of doing it one way.
Right. And I'm with you, and, you know, not having the open locker room, not being able to go up to a guy like David DeCastro and just sort of chat off the record for 10 minutes to see what's going on with the team. Like, that ability is gone. You know, it's much more controlled environment. I mean, even like the protocols, for example, I'll give you the Steelers are requiring us to let them know, like, on Monday, what our plans are for the week in terms of being a practice, when, you know, there's never more than 10 to 15 people. And yet I was late getting in my notice. Hey, I'm going to be there, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And they said, well, you can't come Tuesday because you didn't let us know in time, which is just stupid. It's just stupid. It's just the way the teams are getting control. And I think that at this point, I think the league, and I look, because I cover
being a jerk
baseball,
to the AP writer and saying,
well, I mean,
protocol,
it's not specific,
but it's same thing happening here.
I mean, like, and for me, and if we're just going to vent, let me vent here for a minute. I mean, I cover Major League Baseball. I cover the NHL. I cover major college sports. At Pitt, I don't have to wear a mask at all. I mean, I'm vaccinated. I got my booster shot and everything. And I still wear a mask, but like, they don't care. The NHL is allowing some one-to-one interviews. Major League Baseball is starting to loosen up. The NFL seems to be not interested in that
at
all.
They're never letting us back in, dude.
And I think it's detrimental to the league over the course of the long term. Is that self-serving for me to say that? Of course it is. But I just think that, you know, eventually it's one, because we get the same 8 to 10 players every week. And it's just like, you know, when the season, especially when you're just sort of treading your wheels here, spinning your tires like they are, it's just, and you're writing about the same stuff, the rookie offensive line, how's Ben playing, you know, the depth on the defensive line. I mean, it's the same stuff over and over and over. Like, there are really compelling stories on this team that aren't getting told because the league isn't allowing us to tell them. And I think over the long haul, that's going to hurt the league.
I agree with you. I think overall the notion that Ryan Mink and Garrett Downing are going to interview their boss for public, and that's going to be the only access to the boss. Right. That's not good. I mean, that's team to city to city. But that's the league. Will Graves has been covering sports back when we used to have access at the Associated Press. You can follow him out on Twitter and social media. Anything else to say on the Pittsburgh sports scene? I haven't watched a hockey game in 3 years, just to be honest. When Trotz left, I left. I was supposed to have dinner with him literally last night in Philadelphia. The Islanders had a trip into Philly, and he and I have been planning this big Philadelphia Monday night dinner date forever. And then the whole team gets COVID, and they have to shut down, right? So there's nothing normal about sports, even you know, from a fan perspective or going to the games, covering games, but certainly on the inside of these leagues, wherever they are, the Pirates, the Islanders, the Penguins, whoever, it's nothing's normal in plague time 2 years into this.
Right. And I mean, you hope that it gets normal at some point, but I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, the Penguins, they just got sold this week from Mario Lemieux and Ron Burkle, sold it to the guy, the Fenway Sports Group, the guys that own the Red Sox and Liverpool. And I think
what does that mean for Mario Lemieux, right?
Well, he's keeping an ownership stake in there. He's going to be still be sort of in charge of the hockey stuff as my cat here makes a cameo.
Oh, cool. What's your cat's name?
My cat's name is Owen. He was born on St. Patrick's Day. So it's
Owen, what's up?
It's E-O-G-H-A-N.
I've been trying to train Nala to come in here and hang out during the show, but she won't do it. She's a little
stupid. But I think, you know, the Fenway was looking to get into the sport, into the NHL. The Bruins obviously are not for sale. The Penguins, I mean, look, Mario Lemieux and Ron Burkle bought them for, what, $100 million back in 99, and they sold them probably for around $900 million, I believe is what the number is out there. So, and they've, I mean, the franchise is on much firmer financial ground. You know, I think that they did have a sellout streak end this year. It was like 14 years, I think 600 and some games. But, you know, I think the franchise isn't good in the short term. I mean, we'll be interested to see what happens, much like with the Steelers. We're wondering what's going to happen after Ben's gone, what's going to happen in 3 to 4 years when Crosby and Malkin and those guys are gone. I mean, I think that's going to be, there's going to be hard times coming because that's how the NHL is designed, just like every other league, right? I mean, the Penguins currently have the longest active playoff streak in professional sports in North America. Right. I mean, eventually that's going to end. I mean, look what happened. I remember, like, you thought the Red Wings would be good forever and ever and ever. And obviously that hasn't happened. They've hit the skids the last 5 years. So, but I think in the short term, it's fine for the Penguins. I think Pitt football is having a great year for them. 10 wins, Kenny Pickett, you know, Heisman Trophy candidate, hopefully a finalist. I don't think he should win, I don't think he's going to win. But, you know, somebody, you talk about, you know, the pandemic has helped people too in a weird way, right? Because he was going to go to the NFL and, you know, the NCAA gave him a waiver to come back and he spent some time at the Manning camps and he's become an NFL quarterback. Do I think he's a starting NFL quarterback? No, but I certainly, if I'm the Steelers, I mean, you could do worse than having him as your number two next year, right? So good for them and good for the program. But again, interest is still up and down. I mean, like they had 60,000 for Clemson, but then the next week they had Miami. After they beat Clemson and it was like 40, right? So I think it's
Pittsburgh, the vibrancy of it for you covering it. And I zoom in and out. I don't spend a whole lot of time in Pittsburgh, but you know, when the Penguins and the Capitals were going at it and Trotz was there. And by the way, the idiot that owns the Capitals thinks coaching didn't matter. You know, talk about dynasties and stuff. Okay, great. Have a dynasty without a coach. See how that goes. You know, they tried that in Dallas 30 years ago with Jerry Jones and all that. Right. So I would just say my time in Pittsburgh, and I've mentioned this to you before, and you're the only guy I talk hockey with in Pittsburgh, really. The Penguins are a big deal there, in a bigger deal than I realized in going in and out and sort of helicoptering in during some playoff games. And I went to that game with Mike Tomlin and his wife and like, but I think of the Pirates because I'm a Clemente kid and I'm a 70s kid and boy, the Penguins are such a bigger brand than the Pirates in Pittsburgh.
I would consider the Pirates like a sleeping giant. I mean, I've been here 10 years now. If you had asked me what's the coolest moment I've had in Pittsburgh, and that includes Stanley Cup finals and playoff games and like the Antonio Brown Immaculate Extension game against the Ravens or whatever, you know, it was the 2013 wildcard game where they hosted the Reds, first time they had made the playoffs in 21 years. And after 20 straight years of losing seasons and like the vibe in the park that night, I mean, that is a spot. I think that the Pirates are a sleeping giant, but the problem is like the owner has no interest in sort of getting that giant to sort of come alive, not on an extended basis. I mean, they're in the middle of a rebuild. Ben Sherrington, who won 3 World Series with the Red Sox, is running the show here, and he's a smart guy. I just wonder, they totally overhauled the farm system. They're in a much better place from a prospect standpoint than they were. But to me, that's like the easiest part of this, right? The easiest part is getting young, talented players. The hardest part is turning those young, talented players into major leaguers and doing it in a time frame where they can all be good enough at the same time so that you can be competitive. I mean, that's what's
it's like a big card trick. It's like this big promise of this big prom we're going to have one day. But right. In the meantime, we're going to eat grits and look at dark skies and get our ass kicked 107 times a year.
I haven't been to a game in Camden Yards in 20 plus years, but I would imagine that it's much the same. The Pirates sell the pass. Like if you go to a game, a random game on a Tuesday night, In June, when there's 12,000 people there, the jerseys that you see aren't active players. It's Willie Stargell, it's Roberto Clemente, it's Bill Mazeroski, right? They're in their shop. They only have the jerseys of 2 active players in there, and Brian Hayes, their third baseman, and Brian Reynolds, their all-star center fielder. And there's a very good chance that Reynolds will be moved, maybe not this year, but long before his contract, his team control portion of his career is over. So, I mean, it's very hard for and people get excited. They do have they do have good kids coming, but it is asking a lot. I mean, it's asking a lot of Sherrington to kind of be a baller on a budget here and replicate sort of what the Rays and even the Rays got around to paying guys. They're paying Wander Franco now, right? So, I mean, even the Rays have understood that we got to pay some point. The Pirates have not, since Andrew McCutchen, they got him for a steal. 2012, he signed that deal for, I think it was about $10 million a year, and he outplayed that by, double. I mean, he was an MVP in 13 and MVP finalist 3 times. The face of the franchises, they were good. I don't see anybody in their system that they're willing to do that for now, and I think it's just going to be this treadmill. Like, I think they'll look to be respectable at some point, but make that leap, very hard to see.
Will Graves covers all things Pittsburgh sports at the Associated Press. You can follow him out on Twitter and Facebook. Our window's closing here, dude. It's always good to see you. I'll see you over Mr. Rooney's cookies Sunday at sunset. Sure. We'll meet at the Confluence. It'll be good to be back up in Pittsburgh, man. I appreciate you.
All right, man. Take care, Nestor.
Will Graves, Marylander by birth, Pittsburgher by choice, and he'll be covering all things sports at the Associated Press. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.